Hello and welcome to Talking.Golf on Wisconsin.Golf. Talking.Golf is a weekly podcast featuring Gary D'Amato and Rob Hernandez. And now, talking all things golf in Wisconsin, here's Gary and Rob. Talking.Golf is presented by Iron Jock and Wisconsin.Golf's Shirts of Summer. There are two constants of a Wisconsin summer, heat and humidity. Iron Jock tackles them both with its advanced performance gear that infuses pure silver into every piece of apparel through a process called silver ion technology. This technology kills 99.9% of the bacteria and fungus caused when you sweat, and it does that for the lifetime of the gear. No other brand offers this world-class antimicrobial protection, comfort, and performance. Join Iron Jock Nation and get yours at ironjock.com. That's ironjoc.com. With Gary D'Amato, Rob Hernandez here. It's the back end of the week for Talking.Golf, back at our regular recorded time here on Friday. Gary D'Amato just off the golf course. Rob Hernandez just off the golf course. That's what this time of year is all about, Gary. It's getting out and getting those rounds in.
Well, Rob, you can play any time of year. I've got to get my rounds in because fall is right around the corner here. You can keep playing year-round, so I'm envious.
Well, you got to play Nagawaki today. It hosted it was a U.S. women's mid-amateur earlier in the week, and always a favorite. I mean, it's one of those public golf courses that just continues to, get better with time, and it never disappoints. I mean, and as evidenced by the fact that it fits my criteria as a course I've never played, so I was trying to play it when I was back, but every day I looked, Gary, the earliest tee time was like 3:23, 4:15. I mean, it is booked solid, you know, sun up to sundown, but that's, a reflection of how good it is.
Yeah, very popular course out there in Waukesha County, and they've taken out some. Did you say you've never played it, or you haven't played it in a long time?
I've driven by it now several times, but never played it.
Yeah, it's a really, really good golf course, and spectacular views, and they've done a nice job taking out some trees to open up views of, I guess it's Pewaukee Lake. I know it's not Nagawicka. That's the other direction. But yeah, from the 14th tee, the par 5 that goes downhill with the lake in the distance. And now you can see the lake from several holes. Before it was only like one hole. Now you can see it from several holes on the back nine. And it's just beautiful. It's a very, very good municipal golf course.
We've got three brothers here in the community that I live in that are from Waukesha. Their other brother, the fourth brother, lives just up the road from Nagawaki. And so I was out that way, trying to see him. And it is a beautiful area of Waukesha County. You know, we think of the metropolitan Milwaukee area, Gary, and we just, forget the fact that there's still enough undeveloped area to have great views, great golf courses, and to get away from, the big city feel, which I think is one of Milwaukee's charm. There's a lot of what's Wisconsin nearby.
Yeah, next time you're back home, Rob, let's make it a point to go and play the Nag, as Tom Halleck calls it. I didn't see Tommy out there today, but I saw a lot of people out there, that's for sure. That place is always packed. Our pace of play was very good, though. I have to say, for as many foursomes that were stacked up on that golf course, we played in about little hair over 4 hours, which is, I think, really good for a municipal, golf course. Yeah, it moved along.
Well, that's, I think, you get an A+ for expected pace of play. I squeezed in between the recruiting story that we posted earlier today that I wrote this morning and our recording of the podcast. I had, I think, 2.5 hours to eat lunch, get over to the check-in for 18 holes. I played from the first tee to the 18th green, an hour and 57. But Gary, nobody plays here. It's 105 degrees, I think it is, with 109, heat index. And after 10:30, our courses are wide open, and it's really an interesting dynamic. I mean, I think next year I might not get a full season pass at the courses where we live, and because there's the Troon card, there is, you can go play the TPC Scottsdale for, maybe under $100, which, normally peak season's a couple hundred. The Wigwam courses that are nearby, which, host the Patriot All-American over the holidays, they're very, very cheap. I mean, it's really weird. I mean, I guess it's, if we could play golf in the winter in Wisconsin, I'm sure the green fees would be commensurate with what they are in 105 degree weather here, but it is sure bizarre to be,
you know, to be able to go out there, and I didn't see anybody. I mean, I there was one guy sitting on the porch after I there was one hole where I did pull my drive into the rocks, and he pointed out where it was. But I was surprised that there was even anybody on the patios of these houses that the golf course winds be through, because that's just the way it is this time of year.
Well, plus you've got a souped-up golf cart, don't you? Don't you have like a Mercedes-Benz?
It's a Yamaha. Jim Gaugert would call it the Mercedes-Benz of golf carts.
Yeah.
And that does help. Goes 28 miles an hour. So I did. I had an alarm set for something at 2 o'clock that went off in the golf cart as I was teeing off on a par five, and 2 o'clock meant I had an hour to get. You know, I was like, you know, that was like the 13th hole, and I knew I had an hour to get back to do the podcast. So I said, well, let's see how fast I can play this par five. 4 minutes, Gary, from start to finish.
Well, it helps that you made an eagle, right?
I did not make an eagle. I did keep it in the fairway. I did have one of several 8 to 10 foot birdie putts that I think I missed them all. I started out, I pulled my drive or my approach shot on one, and I had about a 60 foot putt from the fringe, and I just blasted it. And all of a sudden it's going towards the hole, and it dropped. And I paid the price the rest of the round. I couldn't get an 8 to 10 footer to drop to save my life. So that was the only, I had one other birdie, and, so I was able to keep it between the lines, and that helped, you know, the pace of play, you know, in a cart, as you say. And, I think I probably, you know, sucked down about maybe five, bottles of water.
Wow. Well, I've been really lucky too. Over the last 8 or 9 days, I've played Abbey Springs, Morningstar Golfers Club, and today Nagawaki, three great golf courses. So yeah, it's been a good 10 days. And I know we're going to talk about the putting championship, which doesn't count for a full course, but no. I took almost as many strokes as I would on a full course.
Well, we will talk about that in a second. You did bring up Abbey Springs. I don't know. You've written about it. I think Dennis McCann's written about it. I mean, they've undergone some renovations there. I'm not sure if we're going to write more about it, but give us the nuts and bolts. I've heard it's spectacular, and a great old golf course gets maybe an upgrade and, you know, and obviously a new look to a degree.
Yeah. They've, you know, they did a great job with, you know, recontouring some greens, reseeding some greens, and the routing still basically stayed the same, but they just did a really nice nip and tuck and really brought it up. You know, the drainage, they fixed some drainage issues, and it's one of those courses, Rob, where, again, I don't know if you've played there. I think Steve Stricker holds the course record there. I believe he said it when he was with University of Illinois. They came up and played in a college tournament there. I think he shot like 64 or some such number. But it's a great golf course, Rob. And if you haven't played that one, that's another one we have to play. There's a lot of reasons for you to come back again, Rob.
Well, we're going to have to map out for next summer when I'm, you know, especially back in June, we're going to have to, you know, plan in advance, because I talked to another course general manager just yesterday up in the Fox Valley, and he estimated that his golf course does 380 players a day, which means some days it's up over 400. Obviously some days it's below that. I was trying to do the math on how many, you know, foursomes would be full from when to when. To me, it feels like it's a 7 a.m. to at least 4, maybe 5 p.m. book solid. And, you know, and he said the bar business is doing great, you know, and he really was quick to praise the teamwork of the course up, it's Irish Waters up in Freedom, and you know how everybody has really worked together to give the customer a great experience. They've got a good price point for their rounds of golf there, but they also have a great fish fry. And, you know, we kind of talked about how many courses that we've seen that have used the pandemic and the money, the windfall they've gotten to improve not only the golf course experience, but the things that you enjoy in the clubhouse, whether it's a simple drink at the bar, or it's relaxing on the patios, and certainly the menus are great. And so I think it's been a really interesting thing to see that we thought maybe with full Summerfest and full State Fair that we'd see less golf and played, not so, at least from what we can observe.
No, yeah, everywhere I've gone this summer, I've seen the parking lots have been full. There's been, waits for tee times. If you don't book online, you're going to stand around and wait, if you're single, maybe, to join a threesome. It was packed. It was, it was one foursome after another while we were waiting to tee off today at the NAG. And I think it's been that way pretty much everywhere.
Well, enough about the actual full rounds of golf. Gary D'Amato, you probably had the highlight round, the historic round of the week, of the year. You got to stroke the first putt of the very first WSGA State Putting Championship down at Geneva National on the dance floor. What did it feel like to be the first to initiate a new tournament?
It was pretty cool. Yeah, I didn't expect that. But then, Rob Jansen with the WSGA, I guess I was on a wait list and I must have gotten in at the last minute because he informed me about, 10 days before the tournament that I had gotten in. And then when the tee times come out, lo and behold, I was in the first threesome with Joe Duchateau, who I know Rob, former UW Green Bay golfer, really nice player, a nice guy, and a guy named Greg Thompson, who I'm going to be writing about him, Rob, because he showed me the scorecard from his own golf course. He owns a little golf course in his backyard called The Pond. He has a bent grass green. He has three other greens, and there's five holes, and he bought a greens mower, so he mows the greens himself. It's a cool little story. But anyway, I digress. It felt really cool to stroke that first putt in the inaugural State Putting Championship. And after that, it was, as I pointed out in my story, all downhill or side hill or uphill. But I struggled, but it was fun.
It was. And I wanted to do, Gary, from my days of watching our kids play in events where there was live scoring, I was looking at the live scoring of the State Putting Championship, and my heart went out to you. It was Gary was, let's just say, folks, he was towards the bottom of the leaderboard, although there were still a lot of groups out as the first group out there. That wasn't, I don't think, fair representation. And it really, to me, Gary, it was not about the score. It was about I look at this field and you have old golfers, you have young golfers, you have men, you have women. And then as I was watching some of the video that was posted, I think you posted something. I know the WSGA posted something. I didn't give that putting course near enough credit for it, the degree of difficulty that Craig Haltom put into that thing. I was looking at one of the flags and as one of the putts was, it was on the side of a hill. It was kind of like shades of Ozaki again at the State Open, where you could really make it challenging. And I'm sure on a bunch of holes there was, you had a big number on one hole, which to me tells me that it was one of those holes where you needed to get it on the correct, leave the, what it might've been the 25 footer. It might've been the 70 footer on the correct side. And it didn't happen, but other people had other holes where the same thing happened to them.
Yeah. It was number 13, Rob. And I'll tell you, they alternated. If you were in a threesome, for instance, I hit first on the first hole, and then I hit first on the fourth hole, the seventh hole, the 10th hole, and the 13th hole. Mm-hmm. And then, you rotated. So because you really had an advantage watching two guys hit putts in front of you, because really every putt was at least a double breaker, Rob, over a mound or, along a ridge. And if you went first, it was really hard to know what to do. And on that 13th hole, I went first, and the hole was cut. It was downhill with a couple of hills that you had to negotiate. And the hole was cut on the edge of a ridge, which went steeply downhill after that. And I hit my putt just a hair too hard. It got about 3 feet behind the hole, kind of teetered on the edge of the ridge and went over it. And then I knew there was no stopping it. I mean, it went down 70 feet to the bottom of the green.
Wow.
And then, yeah, so instead of having a 3 footer for a two, I had a, 75 footer up a very steep hill. And my next two putts got to the top of the hill, didn't quite get over the ridge, and came back to my feet. So that's how I made it was a very easy seven, Rob, on a on a par two hole. So,
let's talk about the positive. You bounce back with three pars in your final five holes. You played those last five holes in two over to shoot 27 on the back, which I guess obviously you're looking, what would you say? I mean, in a normal round of golf, we're looking for 36 putts or better. I mean, that's two putts.
Yeah.
A hole. In this kind of thing, what you pointed out, the winning score was 37, one over par. I mean, this wasn't easy. How would you characterize what a good score is going to be? I can see this being kind of a series. The WSGA has a series for net partners. They have the Scramble series now that they kind of reimagined this year. Obviously, they have their senior tour and everything else. But, you know, in terms of series, I mean, you've got a number of putting courses now around the state. And I think the original that I can remember was at Spring Creek Golf Course north of Whitewater. They had an 18-hole putting course, which I thought was, you know, you paid a buck and you got to, you know, kind of, you know, look at different angles of putts and keep a score. Fun concept. I think this has some potential here.
Yeah, absolutely. I think at least the state putting championship, I'm sure, is going to be an annual event. It was the vibe was really cool, Rob. You know, you got there and you could not practice putt on the course. They had it roped off, but you know, part of the green was not roped off that you could practice putt on. And then they had the WSJ brought in a band, and it was a very good band. And so you're warming up, and you know, there's 100 people around you with everyone's got a smile on their face. There's a band rocking out, and it was just a real cool vibe. Some guys, you know, had beers. Some guys played the putting contest with beers in hand. If I would have done that, I would have shot a million. So I stayed. I was 100% sober and still shot a 52, which was 16 over par. But yeah, it was a really cool atmosphere, kind of laid back, but yet competitive. I mean, everyone wanted to, you know, a lot of people wanted to win. And after that seven, I just wanted to finish. But it was a lot of fun, and I would gladly do it again.
I like that the music atmosphere. That's something that's very popular down here. Obviously, it's kind of a playoff of the Waste Management Phoenix Open, where they, you know, it's part golf tournament, part rock concert, and if you in certain parts of the golf course, you can hear music, and then they kind of replicate that at the Patriot All American and other events down here. Do you think that you will try this again? Is it something that, you know, what did you learn about yourself and about, you know, quasi competition? I guess it's, you know, did you look at it as a competition? Did you look at it as a fun event? I mean, you know, you were writing about it. There were, I'm sure, a lot of different angles that were going into, you know, you standing over each of those putts.
Yeah, it was definitely competitive, but it was also a lot of fun. Except, you know, when you make a seven on a hole, that's not a lot of fun. But, you know, if I did, I want to do it again. And I'll tell you what, you know, you could stand, you know, if you had a later tee time, you could stand up there on the hill and watch everyone putt on numerous different holes. And that was a huge benefit to people who stood up there and watched, because, you know, not making an excuse, but when you're the very first one out and you don't know what to expect, you know, if you can watch people putt, you can get a good idea for what lines to take, because there's some holes you're just completely guessing. And if you guess wrong, you make a fool of yourself, really. Yeah. Joe Duchateau, who's an excellent player, on the second hole, he went first and he hit a putt that had he thought he played enough break. And I guess he did, but his ball swung around the hole from right to left and must have gone 25, 30 feet left of the hole, almost into the rough. Wow. And when you have a good putter doing something like that, you know it's tough.
Well, and I've always approached putting, at least in the last few years, you know, like a dial on a clock. And I'm having trouble, Gary, convincing myself that there's such a thing as a 3 o'clock or a 9 o'clock putt. And, you know, where, you know, you have to get it out and let it feed and let it drop in, you know, at three or at nine. And, I'm sure there were a lot of those kind of putts in that course.
Yeah, there were some crazy putts that you had to play, you know, 6, 8, 10 feet of break, and just pray you were on the right line, because if you missed your line, it was going to make you look pretty foolish. You know, there were a lot of fours and fives and sixes, only a couple sevens. I had one of them, and there was one eight. I saw someone made an eight on the hole. It's easy to do. I mean, it really is. If you get on the wrong side of the hole and it takes off, and you have 60 feet coming back up a ridge or a hill, it can make you look pretty foolish.
So I'm looking through the scores here, and I'm going to say we're going to call 44 even par. That was where the T29s were, but that was also where our good friend Chuck Garabedian was.
Yeah.
But I did see he had a one on a hole, which there weren't many of those. And
no, there were 33 ones out of something like 1,000, almost 1,400 possibilities. So it was a 2% rate on making a one on a hole, which is not very high. But Chuck had one.
Well, and I don't know how much you got to talk to Rob Jansen, but he had to be pleased. If he had a wait list for this thing, he had to be pleased with that. And the shades of the state par three contest up at the sandbox the previous week. I mean, you know, these are things that are really bringing in a whole new demographic of golfer that has a WSJ handicap.
They are. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Rob had a big smile on his face all day. Meridian Putter sponsored the tournament, Rob, and the guys who finished first, second, and third got Meridian Putters. The first place guy got a gold, like a gold painted or plated. I'm sure it was real gold, but Meridian Putters. Second place guy got a silver putter, and the third place guy got a bronze putter. So it was pretty cool. Everyone got a t-shirt and a hat, and you know, there was a nice buffet lunch. So it was really a well-run and good event.
Yeah, that is awesome. Well, I'm glad you did that. Glad you wrote about it. And, you know, out of all the things that we've covered this summer, in my opinion, the most unique. And I give credit again to Rob Jansen and the WSGA staff for thinking outside the box on that one. And out of all, you know, again, looking forward to seeing that on the schedule every year. This is Talking.Golf presented by Iron Jock and Wisconsin.Golf shirts this summer. When you're sweating out a golf tournament like Gary D'Amato was this week, even on a putting green, you need to have Iron Jock on your body, buddy. Let me tell you, it tackles both heat and humidity that we see every summer here in Wisconsin, and it does it with pure silver that they infuse into every piece of apparel through a process called silver ion technology. It kills 99.9% of the bacteria and fungus caused when you sweat. It doesn't necessarily make your putting game better, but it does guarantee that it'll kill that bacteria and fungus for the lifetime of the gear. You can learn more about Iron Jock and all of its antimicrobial protection, comfort, and performance at ironjock.com. That's ironjoc.com. Gary D., you also were covering conventional golf this week. We mentioned at the NAG on Wednesday, they had the U.S. Women's Mid-Amateur qualifying, and the top two finishers off to Florida for the national championship next month. Kylie Specht out of Madison, a former Illinois State golfer, did some college or high school coaching down in Illinois, but now living in the Madison area. She won with a 76. And one of our favorites, Sammy Mantella of Wauwatosa, Kirk Mantilla's wife, the former Sammy Forrester, former Badger golfer, a 77. They are off to the USGA Women's Mid-Am next month. And then you covered the men's second of two state mid-am qualifyings for the USGA Men's Mid-Amateur coming up at Erin Hills and at Blue Mountain Golf and Country Club. And this one marked the end of a long and frustrating journey. But boy, you couldn't pick a better time to qualify for your first U.S. Mid-Am if you're Jack Schultz, right?
Yeah, Jack was very happy. You know, Robin, I think we both written about it. This was his 10th USGA championship that he qualified for, but his first Mid-Am, and he had been trying since he turned 25, 6 or 7 years ago. He's made four U.S. amateurs, and three of them since he turned 25, he told me. The first one was back in 2011. Well, I think he was still at Michigan when it was at Erin Hills. But anyway, yeah, he was really happy. He played great. And I think he birdied the last two holes. I know I watched him birdie 18. He stuffed his approach to about a foot and tapped in and took medalist honors. And he was very excited to finally qualify for the Mid-Am.
A 333 on the back nine. And as Gary said, he birdied 17 and 18 to win it with a 67, finishing second. Nathan Colson of Mequon with a 68. We'll talk about other tournaments going on this week where the participants in those, I think, benefited from competing in the state open last week at Ozaukee. That was Nate's home course. He's a 9-time champion there, but clearly a former Marquette golfer who still got game.
Yeah, he does. And he and Jack were paired together, and Joe Weber was supposed to play with them, which would have been a great threesome. Joe withdrew. I'm not sure why, but he joined about 20 other people who withdrew from that tournament, but yeah, so it was a twosome with Jack and Nate. And I think they fed off each other, Rob. I watched them play a few holes on the front nine and I watched them finish, and they both were hitting quality golf shots. And, you know, it's no surprise that either one of those guys or both of them made it through.
There was a lot of jockeying for that third spot. At one point, Corey Ahn of Lake Geneva was in the mix. Travis Pronchinski of the great state amateur up at Sand Valley, he was right in the mix. Nick Nelson made a late charge. John Sauer of Appleton, not too far behind. But David Brock also early on was playing pretty well. But ultimately, it was Ryan Zekeli of Heartland, a name that I just wasn't familiar with, Gary. But He's been kind of one of those guys, maybe behind the scenes a little bit, not in the spotlight. I think one of the first things I saw, he played in a Madison men's setty way back, maybe about 10 years ago. And clearly a guy that's, got some talent. What do you know about him and any surprise there that he got through to Aaron Hills?
I guess a little bit of a surprise because he doesn't play much competitive golf. He plays a lot at his club. He's a member of the Legends Club. And he came out to Merrill Hills, he told me, and played a few practice rounds to get ready and learn the greens a little bit. But yeah, he doesn't play much competitive golf. He has a big job with Humana. He has something to do with, I think, marketing for Humana in the Midwest or Wisconsin, Illinois. It's a job that takes up a lot of his time. And he's got three young boys at home. The oldest is seven and is just starting to play golf. So he doesn't play in a lot of stuff, but he found lightning in a bottle, and he's been a very good player for a long time. He just doesn't compete very much, but so I was a little surprised that he made it through. He's going to have the time of his life at Aaron Hills and Blue Mountain, Rob.
Yeah, I tell you, it's really exciting. We're tracking a lot of this qualifying. Another result from earlier in the week out at Red Hill Country Club in Rancho Cucamonga, California. Mark Scheibach, a former University of Wisconsin golfer from Fond du Lac, shoots a 200 par 70. And is one of four qualifiers out of that particular regional qualifying to be able to qualify to come back home to Wisconsin. I know he's excited about that. He's been a GM at a number of different courses in the Palm Springs area. And, the only guy that I've seen so far, Gary, who's, been away from or lives now away from Wisconsin, was able to qualify and come back. So that's exciting. What are you thinking? Are you getting excited for this USGA championship? I mean, it's one of those where, it doesn't have quite the luster, but it has, I mean, my goodness, it has a master's exemption. It has, the best former college players, and it has a lot of guys who grind away at their game and all of a sudden find it. You get a lot of guys who haven't played in, kind of like the senior amateur coming up this week, where you've got former major leaguers, you've got, athletes from other walks of life. I think you don't see that maybe quite to the extent the mid-am level because it's 25 or better and you really got to, learn the game quick, but it is different than the U.S. amateur and I think a neat offering for the USGA.
It is, Rob, because, a lot of these guys, they're ultra competitive. They have great golf games, but they're not quite as razor sharp as the college kids who dominate the U.S. amateur because they're playing every day and they're playing in tournaments. And these guys, most of them, if not all of them, have jobs and a lot of them have families, children. And so it's just harder to keep your game at that elite level. But, as you mentioned, they can still find it. And when they do, they're every bit as good as any amateurs in the country. So it's a great tournament for amateurs 25 and older who might not be able to qualify for USAM, but they get in this one. And it's a national championship, as you mentioned, Rob, master's exemption, also a U.S. Open exemption. So there's really a lot riding on this tournament.
Well, and it's coming up at Aaron Hills and at Blue Mountain Golf and Country Club. Each site will host the entirety of the field for 18 holes of stroke play qualifying. Then the low 64, I believe it is, Gary, right? Like the USAM?
Yes.
Yeah, you get to go to match play, and then they'll bracket it out and go from there. And I believe, second week of September 11th through the 15th stands out in my mind.
That's right. I think, 10th through the 15th, I believe, the first 2 days are stroke play, and then they go into match play for the remainder.
So got that to look forward to. This week, a lot of golf going on. One USGA championship involving a couple of Wisconsin golfers. Becky Iverson, the director of golf at the Bridges Golf Course in Madison, makes the cut. She shoots 78-77 at the U.S. Senior Women's Open Championship. That's going on in Kettering, Ohio at the NCR Country Club. And she is currently T35. Helen Alfredson with a pair of 70s leading the way at 6 under par with a one-shot lead over Lita Lindley and up three over Annika Sorenstam. Maggie Leaf, the talented amateur out of Pewaukee, 82-80. She got in as an alternate. She finishes T67. Won't be quite good enough to get in that top 50 in ties to play the final two rounds, but a very good showing. That's T67 out of about 125 golfers there, Gary D'Amato. And I know you get to play with her next week, and I'm sure she'll lean on you for a couple of tips as to how to take her game to that next level, right?
Yeah, I love playing with Maggie. I've played with her a few times in the past. We're good friends with her husband, Jim Leaf. And I always play, they have a charity event called Tee Up for the Cure to benefit juvenile diabetes. Jim Leaf's father had juvenile diabetes and was one of the very first people to be treated with insulin, Rob. Years and years and years ago. So I have a soft spot in my heart for the Leafs, and looking forward to playing with Maggie and hearing her stories from the U.S. Women's Senior Open.
Well, and she's very much a role model for all the young women who are playing amateur golf in Wisconsin. My daughter got to play with her a number of times. And of course, not only one that plays a lot and sets a good example that way in terms of, you know, showing that you can compete until, you know, late in life. And she's not that old, but she's, you know, one of the kind of in that senior amateur range, obviously, to be able to play in the Senior Open. But has so many great stories and messages to tell the younger kids, and gives back to the game as a USGA rules official too at many times too. And so she's volunteering as much as she's playing on her own. And we really like Maggie Leaf. A couple of events going on that involve people we've written about in the last couple of weeks. PGA Tour Canada in Brainerd, Minnesota, the only event on the PGA Tour Canada south of the Canadian border. It's in Brainerd, Minnesota this week. And Jordan Niebrugge, who we saw at the State Open at Ozaukee last week, Monday qualifies into the event, shoots 66-67, and is currently T24, 14 unders leading. So they're really eating up the resort that they're playing in Brainerd. But, Gary, it's great to see out of six Wisconsin guys in the field. Nice to see Jordan's name atop that group.
You know, I hope he got some confidence out of playing in the State Open and you know, contending and having a chance to win coming down the back nine on the final day, Rob. And it appears he has. We've always loved Jordan's game. I mean, he's so talented, and a lot of people wonder why he hasn't made it. Well, it's tough. It's tough to get to that highest level in golf. You know, thousands try every year, and, you know, and most fall short, but Jordan definitely has the talent to be there. And I hope this is a stepping stone as he continues to progress and get back to where he was, you know, a few years ago when he was a world beater.
As we record the podcast, I believe his top 60 and ties are the ones that go on to the weekend. And right now you have to be at 5 under or better and that's a pretty high bar. So right now, Thomas Longbella, right on that line, the former state amateur champion and former Minnesota Gopher out of Chippewa Falls, currently 3 under through 12. He's at 4 under for the week at T62. So he's right there on the bubble. Harrison Ott and Jordan Hahn. Harrison, the former state open champion two times over out of Brookfield and, of course, Vanderbilt University. He's 2 under for the day, 3 under for the week, as is Jordan Hahn, who is 4 under for the day, the former Badger. Alex Gaugert, the former Minnesota Gopher and former state amateur champ out of Lake Geneva, gets in on a sponsor's exemption and is 1 under for the day, 2 under for the week. He's at T92. And George Kneiser had a tough start, even par for today at a 70, but 71 yesterday. Looks like he'll miss the cut as they're going low in an event south of the border, but for a tour north of the border. When you see the other guys in that field there, Gary, I think the two that we are keeping an eye on, Thomas Longbella, currently 20th on the, or actually 19th on the Canadian Tour Fortinet Cup order of merit, I guess is what you call it, points list. Harrison Ott, 18th, one spot above him. At their current projection, they're expected to slide one, but the top 20 on that tour is pretty good. I know that I think you've got to get up in that top 10 in order to, you know, skip stages of Q School on the Corn Ferry Tour. But, you know, I like what I'm seeing out of those two guys, especially this summer.
Yeah, they've both been really good on that tour. You know, up until this week, I think Harrison Ott has 4 top 10 finishes in his last 5 starts on that tour. And Longbella is right there, too. Really critical, though, as we're coming down the stretch, Rob. I think there might be only 3 tournaments left after this one on that tour. Not sure. I don't have the schedule in front of me, but it's they're coming down to the end of that tour schedule, and really important to make cuts now and move up that points list. So hopefully, I don't know how many holes does Harrison have left. Hopefully he can get up and make a cut.
Yep. He is currently with 6 holes to go And as is Thomas Long Bell. Looks like they, now that they're on the same hole, but may, I don't believe I remember them being in the same group the first two rounds. But boy, with six Wisconsin guys, there aren't many places to put them on a sheet. So kind of a nice problem to have. We got more, as you said, Gary, we got, you know, how tough it is to get there. We got a couple other of Wisconsin golfers trying to get through the pre-qualifying for the PGA or for the Korn Ferry Tour. And at Ashland, Nebraska, Emmett Herb out of Middleton really got off to a tough start on day one of 79, but has come back with rounds of 72, 75. That 75 actually inched him up one spot into 49th place. He needs to get in the top 29 in ties to move on to the first stage of qualifying. And right now at 13 over par, he's got a lot of work to do. He's 12 shots off the cut line. So Emmett Herb looking kind of as a long shot to get through to first stage out of Nebraska. Sam Frank, Oconomowoc native, currently playing his golf, caddying a lot down here in the desert, withdrew after a couple rounds. He shot 78, 79 and pulled out, as did John Goldberg of Franksville, former Badger golfer, who hasn't played much mini tour golf this year and had been in the field, but then pulled out before they teed it up. The other location of pre-qualifying this week, Lantana, Texas, where our friend Tony Romo got off to a great start today. It was 2 under at one point early on the front nine, but wound up shooting 75, 3 over par, dropped him 11 spots into T65, entering tomorrow's final round. Blake Jens out of Middleton with a good round today, a 70 after rounds of 78 and 79. He's 70th, but again, right now the top 35 in ties is at 2 under. And Tony Romo 6 over. So he's got to make up 8 shots in one round. And I'm sure Tony did that, Gary, mainly to see where his game is at, because at times it's close. At times he realizes that, you know, it is just hard to, you know, get up and down at the snap of a finger to save a par that might get you, you know, that momentum you need to go on a birdie run. Not a lot of birdie runs in this thing out of Tony Romo so far, but not bad golf either for a former NFL quarterback.
Yeah, I'm sure Tony enters a lot of stuff in the summer because, you know, his summer is coming to an end. He's got to gear up for his announcing job. And so he plays a very, very busy schedule. As you know, Rob, he plays a lot in Wisconsin. He played multiple events in our state this year with some success. But I think he enters a lot of stuff just to challenge himself and to see where his game is and to see where he needs to improve. I'm sure that's why he entered, you know, Q School qualifier, just to see where he stands and to find out what he's got to work on. And believe me, he'll work on it, Rob. That guy is, he's very, very serious about his golf and very serious about getting better. And he will.
And then next week, we have three more pre-qualifiers for the first stage of Korn Ferry Tour Q School. And everybody who does this for the first time, as you know, Gary, has to go through the pre-qualifying. And once they make it through a first stage, they never have to go through pre-qualifying again. But Griffin Barella, the former Badger out of Lakewood, Colorado, Hunter Eichhorn, the former Marquette golfer out of Kearney, Michigan, Austin Kanzorski, who contended at the, as did Hunter, obviously losing in the playoff at the State Open last week, Austin out of Germantown, another former Marquette golfer, Taylor Kozer out of Rice Lake, veteran mini tour player, and Matt Tolan, the former state amateur champ out of Eau Claire, among the golfers that will be teeing it up next week at on the Senator course at Capitol Hill Golf Club in Prattville, Alabama. I believe that might be on the Robert Trent Jones Trail, but we'll see who can advance as a bill to the next stage from the Capitol Hill Golf Club Senator course.
Well, we certainly have a lot of guys trying, Rob. It's I remember the days when we'd have one or two guys in these qualifiers, you know, not so long ago. And now we've got, you know, 8 to 10 guys who are trying to get through. And again, it speaks to the quality of golf and the competitiveness in our state.
And I got to double check, but I know that Kaylor Steger out of Sturdivant is also playing next week. I believe he's playing at Bermuda Run out in Bermuda Run, North Carolina next week. So that'll take care of the pre-qualifying. And then first stage qualifying, there's a wave September 13th through the 16th that courses in North Carolina, California, and Texas, and then another wave the following week. That one actually has, I think, 6 sites. And Florida has 2, Arizona with 1, Mobile, Alabama, 1 in Texas. And they added one there, because of the number of people who are qualified for first stage. They had to add a site at Naperville, Illinois at White Eagle Golf Course. So Wow. All over the country. And then another one at Chardon, Ohio. So wow, they just, there's a whole bunch. I mean, it's like the lottery here. And my math is way off. There's 9 sites in that second week. Actually, there's 3 weeks of it now. Boy, I've never seen that before, Gary. That's a lot of first stage qualifying.
It is. And we've talked about it many times, Rob. You have to play well at the right times, and the right time for these guys is Q school and the pre-qualifiers and the qualifiers. And if you don't play well, you know, you're on the mini tours again for another year. It's a meritocracy, but it's so hard to get to those top levels. And we wish all the guys from our state and the women who are trying the best of luck here in the next couple of weeks.
Absolutely. And we've Tess Hackworthy teeing it up this weekend on the Symetra Tour in Idaho. And last but not least, we've got a very interesting Ally Challenge leaderboard in Grand Blanc, Michigan, where 4 Wisconsin golfers, including one that played last week at the state open, Skip Kendall, in the field, and one who caddied last week at the LPGA Tour Q School, Steve Stricker. And the player he was caddying for is on the bag of her uncle, Mario Tiziani. And Mario Tiziani, currently the best of the Badger crew, 300 par 69 after round one. He is T19. He really needs a good finish. He's at 82 on the Charles Schwab Cup points list, money list, and could really, really use a big week to get up in that top 40. And we'll see if he gets it here. Off to a great start. He is currently 4 shots behind leader Fred Funk. Fred Funk, folks, if you had Fred Funk on your bingo card as the round one leader, collect your prize. Fred has battled injury in recent years, but he is one of the most delightful guys on the PGA Tour Champions. It is great to see him go low here, even for one day over at Warwick Hills.
Yeah, another old stalwart from the Greater Milwaukee Open days, Rob. I know he came to Milwaukee. He loved Brown Deer, as did a lot of guys who didn't, you know, hit it 320 back in the day. That was, of course, you had to maneuver your ball around. You didn't have to be a long driver of the ball. And Fred Funk loved it in Milwaukee. And it's kind of cool to see his name on top of a leaderboard. Haven't seen that for a while, as you mentioned.
Steve Stricker and Jerry Kelly, 200 par 70s to start things off here at the Ally Challenge. And then Skip Kendall with a 74. And it'll be an interesting weekend over there across Lake Michigan, because it's Fred Funk by one over Woody Austin, Brett Quigley, Stephen Ames. Out of that group, only Stephen Ames in the top 10 in the Schwab Cup standings. Then Scott Parrell, alone in fifth. He's 15th on the Schwab Cup standings. And then David Frost, Lee Jansen, Ken Duke, Robert Carlson, Jeff Maggard, Shane Birch. Nobody in the top 25. So I think there's going to be a lot of movement. It's a matter of getting hot, staying hot over there. It's a course much like Brown Deer Park, much like University Ridge, that is your typical upper Midwest course, and one that these guys played on the regular tour at the old Buick Open. So it'll be fun to monitor their activity through the weekend. And of course, we've got the PGA Tour playoffs going on. And because of the unique format, Scottie Scheffler with a big lead in that. A lot of debate over what's a good format for this thing. I kind of think that Scottie Scheffler deserves to have a five-shot cushion. I think he started at 10 under, and he's, at least when I stopped watching, he was 17 under. What do you think about the format to end the year there, Gary D'Amato?
Yeah, Rob, you know, the one thing I'm not crazy about is with that format is, you know, the guy can win the tournament and not come out on top in the FedEx Cup points. You know, it's kind of confusing. You have a tournament winner who actually finishes second or third in the points, and because of the cushion that they give the guys at the top of the points list. But it's a little confusing. I'm not sure what the answer is. I haven't given it a lot of thought if they could change it, what they would do. But, boy, the whole tour is going to be changing in the coming years, Rob. It sounds like it'll be interesting to see what they do with the FedEx Cup playoffs, because everything is changing on the PGA Tour.
Yeah, they're going with the new, you know, 20 kind of elite status players that'll have access to a number of events that the others don't on the one end. But on the other end, they're going to front the rookies $500,000. And then as they make that money, they'll take it out of there. That way they have something in their bank account to plan the travel and to maybe take some of the pressure off so they can perform better. I kind of liked, you know, what Jay Monahan unveiled this week. Obviously in response to Live Golf, but it remains to be seen whether it stops the exodus of players, the top, especially the top players from the PGA Tour over to LIV Golf.
Well, you know, LIV Golf has, if it's done one thing positive for the PGA Tour, it's made them take a look at their product. And Rob, I think, you know, 40 some stroke play events, a lot of them with sort of weak fields, and you see the same thing over and over every week. The audience is skews very old now for PGA Tour broadcasts and people tuning in. And I think this has forced the tour to look at itself and come up with some innovative and creative stuff. I just read a story about Tiger Woods and Rory McIlroy combining they're going to be doing some live primetime indoor golf, you know, into a screen with a live audience, and just something I think that's going to appeal to a whole different, you know, subset of golf fans who maybe don't tune into PGA Tour events every week and watch them. So the tours has to make some changes, and it's doing some good things. I think it's doing some creative, interesting things coming up here.
And one of our Wisconsin entities that has been very supportive of the PGA Tour, Century Insurance out of Stevens Point, is one of those, the Century Tournament of Champions at the start of the year. Beginning now in 23, they're going back to a calendar year schedule, which I think is a great move. And their purse will be one of those that has at least a $20 million purse. And I like that. The player impact program, I don't think anybody's quite understood, but it'll, you know, it's incentive for these guys. I mean, I don't know if there's, you know, we're talking about, you know, sums of money, Gary D'Amato, that you, me, and our listeners can only dream about. And yet they're still trying to push the envelope and make it so that, you know, the unlimited budget that LIV Golf seemingly has doesn't continue to erode the product on the PGA Tour. It's unfathomable we're at this point. You know, you think back to the roots of the PGA Tour and how it was born out of, you know, the PGA of America and guys chasing Monday qualifiers every single week. And then, you know, they created the exempt tour and we kind of, you know, took off on the, you know, the slow road to where we are.
Yeah, the tour, you know, obviously has changed over the years, but not all that much, Rob. It's been the same product, as I said. And going forward here, we're going to see a different PGA Tour. I mean, in 2 or 3, 4 years down the road, it's going to be almost unrecognizable, I think. And that's because of LIV. But I think what's happening is a good thing. Competition is good. And, you know, people can knock LIV, and I certainly have too. But it's forced the tour to look at itself. And I think that they're going to be going in some very interesting directions going forward in the next few years here.
And I saw on the Korn Ferry Tour coverage on Golf Channel 2 that they're upping the purses there. Eventually, you know, all the playoff events will be $1 million purses. And the regular events will have, you know, significant purse increases each of the next 3 years. So, you know, they haven't quite filtered down to PGA Tour Canada and PGA Tour Latino America. However, there's a segment that says, you still want these young players to earn their way to the point where the money becomes lucrative enough where they can continue to do it beyond, you know, some of them are doing it 10 and 15 years. So that, you know, I still think the money is okay, but you know, it is a grind. And again, it's neat to see golf think outside the box. I think, you know, we've had a product that, as you said, has been kind of very similar in its presentation for many, many years. And, you know, again, it never makes for a dull moment in the world of golf. And I think it has been covered, I don't think, by the mainstream media like ESPN as much as you would expect. But at the same time, it's a very complex, you know, what they're trying to do here. And I'm not sure everyone is going to understand it until it actually gets put into motion here in 2023.
Yeah, I agree, Rob. I think we have to see it first. But certainly some of the ideas that are being thrown out and some of the things that not only have been proposed, but seem to be adopted, I think it's going to make it for very interesting viewing, you know, going forward, starting in 2023.
Well, Gary, last full weekend before Labor Day, what are your plans?
Well, I think we've got the state senior amateur coming up, Rob. I'm going to cover the second day of that. I'm looking forward to that. And I've got a couple other things going next week, golf-wise. Hopefully get on the course once or twice. How about you?
Well, we've got one more recruiting story to do. The two that we've had so far this week, Jack Glatsby out of Pewaukee and Grant Wysorski, Wysoric out of Heartland Arrowhead, both going to Purdue Northwest University, a relatively new concept university. It was the merger of two satellite Purdue University campuses in Indiana, and it's a Division II school. First time they recruited Wisconsin. So those two young men who have had solid junior careers in the Milwaukee area are going there. And then today wrote and posted the story about Connor Schaefer, who's the first recruit to the revived Division III program at UW-Stevens Point. And really a fascinating kid. He played baseball up until the pandemic, took advantage of the pandemic because there was no baseball to try golf again, and really worked at it hard. And his improvement from 2021 to 2022 statistically really significant, not enough to get noticed maybe by higher levels, but liked what Stevens Point had to offer golf wise and who wouldn't with home courses at Century World and at Stevens Point Country Club. And so he's committed there as their first announced recruit. They didn't announce it. He made it known to us that he was going there. And so he's the first one we've been able to write about that's headed to UWSP. And obviously the college golf season actually starts today, Madison College down at an event in Illinois. So we're going to learn a lot of these schools. We've got, I'm going to write something, Gary, overnight. Was thinking about throwing it in the sweet spot, but it there's so much, you know, there's so many of these coming here in a short period of time, but new women's coach at Edgewood College, Zach Kentrick, who's the head pro at the Legend at Bergamot in Oregon. And he played for Gary Oftedal at Edgewood College and now taking over the women's program. Again, I'm thinking that, you know, Gary, who's been the coach at Edgewood for a number of years, you know, at some point there's going to be a change in the guard there. Zach could, you know, perhaps, you know, segue into a director of golf, you know, situation like we've seen elsewhere. And speaking of those, Jay Christensen, who has been the head men's coach under Brady Johnston at Carthage, is going to be the director of golf on an interim basis this year. And they'll launch a nationwide search after the season for a replacement for Brandy. And I know Carroll University also with a coaching change. So we're going to try to round those up here this weekend. And then one more recruiting story for sure early in the week next week. And on a young lady from Prescott High School up in northern Wisconsin going out to Kutztown University. And that it'll be a fun one to write because she put a lot of effort into just kind of researching what was the right fit for her. And so that one's coming up. And then of course, Hannah Dunk going to UW Green Bay. We got an email interview out with her, and she's, you know, a part of this great senior class that emerged and developed here over the last few years. So again, it really doesn't slow down, does it?
not until maybe the last week of December, Rob, when we get a breather. But yeah, there's stuff to write about year round now in golf, but we love it. That's why we're here.
Absolutely. Well, we'll let you rest up for the state senior AM. Good luck with that. And Gary, we'll talk golf again next week.
All right, Rob. Sounds good.
Talking.golf is presented by Iron Jock and Wisconsin.golf shirts of summer. There are two constants of a Wisconsin summer, heat and humidity. Iron Jock tackles them both with its advanced performance gear that infuses pure silver into every piece of apparel through a process called silver ion technology. This technology kills 99.9% of the bacteria and fungus caused when you sweat, and it does that for the lifetime of the gear. No other brand offers this world-class antimicrobial protection, comfort, and performance. Join Iron Jock Nation and get yours at ironjock.com. That's ironjoc.com. For Gary, I'm Rob. We'll talk golf again next week.